This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. People may know Over the Rhine for its great restaurants and bars, but it has a history as rich as its nightlife. The Over the Rhine Museum, scheduled to open in 2020 with a pop-up version available in 2016, will capture the community's extensive past with the help of local residents, historians, designers, and business owners. Here to talk about how the museum will delve into OTR's history are Over the Rhine Museum Board Chair Ann Delano Stewart and board members Nancy Yerian and John Blatchford. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ann, Nancy, and John, thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And why an Over the Rhine Museum?
Well, Over the Rhine is incredibly rich in our city's history, and right now it's going through this major transition. And there are all these remnants of the past and kind of echoes of, previous lives, people who've lived there before, that you can sort of sense as you walk through Over the Rhine. But as this transition progresses through Over the Rhine, some of those echoes will be silenced as, buildings are reused and changed in ways that minimize the pieces of the historic fabric that tell us those stories. So we're really interested in capturing those built forms that have those stories to tell before the transition in Over the Rhine is so complete that they're harder to find.
So it's about preserving this history. Mm-hmm. Do you find that people know the history of Over the Rhine well? Is it kind of an untold story in Cincinnati?
I think they know parts of the history. We've seen as these transitions happen and Over the Rhine sort of becoming this happening place. You mentioned the nightlife. A lot of people are capitalizing on the German heritage in the 19th century in Over the Rhine, which is an incredibly important, rich story to tell. But it's not the only story that the neighborhood has to tell. Some people are starting to forget the 20th century stories, the era of Over the Rhine, where it was home to Appalachian migrants who came to Cincinnati, and the era of Over the Rhine when it was a primarily African-American neighborhood after the West End experienced a lot of destruction for I-75. So we really want to make sure that we're telling all of those stories. So people know pieces, but there's so much more out there that they don't know.
Enough stories to fill a museum, right, John?
Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah. And I would say, even if you think from a maybe marketing perspective, we've told the German story, I think, pretty well. There's a lot of great groups doing that very well. But that's a very short time period. And even during that time period, it wasn't exclusively a German story. There were so many immigrants from so many different countries. And then, not to mention the 100 years in between when, there are all different types of people kind of living in Over the Rhine. So I think we want to tell that complete story.
Yeah. And wasn't Over the Rhine at one point one of the most densely populated neighborhoods in the whole country?
Yeah, it was second only to the Lower East Side of New York City, which is actually sort of the inspiration for this museum is based on the Tenement Museum of the Lower East Side of New York City. That's a museum where they've interpreted sort of everyday stories of individual people in residential spaces. And that's a lot of the way that we want to tell these stories. The big exciting difference that we have, though, is the Tenement Museum in New York City was vacant after 1928. So the stories they tell basically end in 1928. Whereas, as Nancy said, we have this rich wealth of other stories of Appalachian migrants and African American inhabitants in Over the Rhine, all the way up into the present, really.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to incorporate the idea of where is Over the Rhine headed in the future into the museum? Is that going to be part of it?
Well, we're waiting to see. Yes, of course, we want to see what happens in the future of Over the Rhine, and we want to be a vital civic presence, and we want to expand and grow and change, as the neighborhood, emerges to whatever it's going to be. But also, we don't have a physical location yet. We're mm-hmm. working on. We've been looking at lots of building options, and so we're working on finding a bricks and mortar space for our museum, and we're really aware that wherever we wind up physically in space is going to have a lot of power in determining the stories that we tell.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have an exact spot picked out yet. A friend of mine, when I told him we were talking about this today, wanted to know if this was going to be near the streetcar route, if there is any plan of doing that.
Well, John, you might want to talk about
buildings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have some key criteria that go into choosing a building. Of course, in Over the Rhine, that's probably number one. We want to be kind of accessible to people, which includes potentially parking, but certainly the streetcar public transportation as that improves in Cincinnati. We want to be near that. And then, of course, it has to be manageable that we can buy and rehab it. But those are kind of the main criteria. So I think, yes, to be near the streetcar especially would be great, or some form of being near where people are going to be would be great.
But again, it doesn't, you know, we don't have to have this particular building or that particular building, because all the buildings of Over the Rhine have really rich stories to tell. So, you know, take it back to the Lower East Side again. When they actually did the research for the Lower East Side Tenement Museum, they were able to identify over, you know, almost 7,000 particular people who had lived in that one tenement building in the Lower East Side over all of the years it was inhabited. So when we start to do that research on a particular building, once we have one, we will have so many rich stories right there in that physical space.
Nancy, how long has this idea been brewing?
You know, the idea has floated around, I think, a few times in the past. In this particular iteration, we've been working on it for since almost a year ago. A few people started sort of meeting in coffee shops and talking about this idea and how do we make this happen. And then in April, we formed our board of about 13 members, and we've sort of been just barreling ahead full speed since then.
Yeah, since April, we've gotten a nonprofit status with the state of Ohio. We've looked at lots of potential building sites. We've started a really amazing quarterly lecture series. We have a great Facebook page with lots of updates all the time. We've just really been generating a lot of enthusiasm. It's been really
you're getting
fun.
You're getting good community reaction. People saying, yeah, we really should do this.
Absolutely. But all of our events have been really, really well attended. We started our quarterly lecture series in July and had about 65 or 70 people come out to hear the talks that we did. And then we just, in the beginning of October, did some walking tours, and the first one sold out, so we opened up a second one, and we opened up the second one the day before the tour, and we got, you know, all but five slots filled in one day's notice. So people are really excited.
Yeah, it seems like an idea that people are like, oh yeah, this should have existed maybe 10 years ago or 20 years ago, who knows?
We will continue our conversation about the Over the Rhine Museum, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Joining us this afternoon, Over the Rhine Museum Board Chair Ann Delano Stewart and Board Members Nancy Urien and John Blatchford. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, I'm curious about something, the concept of the pop-up museum, something that might happen this year. What's that?
Well, so we know that we're working on a five-year plan, and we know that it's going to take a long time for us to identify a building, raise funds, purchase the building, rehab it as a working museum. But we want to keep generating enthusiasm and get people excited about what we're doing. So the solution to that is to do a little mini version of our museum in a pop-up space. So we'll be using a storefront somewhere in Over the Rhine, hopefully within a year, to create sort of one model apartment where, you know, the idea of this museum is that it's an immersive experience. So you're actually going to be walking into people's apartments, which will be interpreted as if they have just walked out. So, you know, whoever had lived in this building in 1915 has just gone out to get their newspaper, and you've stumbled into their apartment, and you will see the size of the space, the kinds of objects they lived in, the textiles, the wallpaper, you know, everything will be there to really give you this full, rich experience of almost stepping back in time. So, the idea of a pop-up space would just do that in mini while we're, you know, working to get the big real museum up and running.
Larger version going.
Right.
Yeah. How are you going to pull together all the things for the museum for these displays?
Well, we do have a collections committee that's working. One of the ideas is that this is a very experiential museum, as Anne mentioned. So the things that will be in these displays and these interpreted spaces and apartments will be things that you can, you know, touch and experience. They won't be objects that museums have behind glass, right? So we'll be looking at a whole lot of different ways to sort of procure those objects, donations, possibly, you know, purchase and thrift stores and things like that, but to create the materiality of those spaces.
Right. And I think part of it is identifying the right building for some mm-hmm. of the key features. Does it have the historic trim and historic stairways and all the, I would say, bones of a good museum? But then, of course, as we said, everything's going to be handled and touched. So we might mm-hmm. find it at a thrift store. And you know, it might just be interpretive of what would have been there at the time, but it doesn't necessarily have to be this great artifact that has to be enclosed and preserved.
And in fact, part of the beauty of the museum is there won't be barriers. There won't be signs on the wall to read it. You know, there won't be glass boxes of you can't touch this. The whole thing is that it's a really immersive experience.
John, why do you think it's important for people to be aware of Over the Rhine's history?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think it's easy to see the history of Over the Rhine in the time that you've been here or the time that you've known about or heard about. But I think to tell the whole story, maybe from the beginning, you know, I mean, 7,000 people living in a building in the Lower East Side, who knows? Mm-hmm. You know, 150 years of Over the Rhine, you might find a building, you know, 10,000 people have lived there, who knows? So I think it's always important to know, I guess, where you came from, and maybe that will inform where you go.
Now, how likely are you to be successful at getting this going? What's your feeling at this point?
I think we're going to be amazingly successful. We have great support. We have lots of people interested. Besides our board, we also have an advisory board of another 19 sort of experts or people who have some sort of expertise they can bring to the project. And they're really enthusiastic about helping us. There are tons of funding options. You know, we have a grants committee that's been working on a lot of grants, you know, starting small. But we see the landscape out there that there are these larger grants that could really, once we've established ourselves, make a big impact in getting us towards our goal. So I absolutely think this is going to happen.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, you know, identifying the building, and if we can purchase it and get it to a stable state, then at least there's a singular goal in mind. Because I think it's a lot easier for people to wrap their minds around, okay, this is the location, this is the building, this is what it looks like. I can get behind this financially or with my time or whatever it may be. Because right now I think we see the dream, but it's harder to maybe sell to a broader audience until there's probably a specific building.
But I think that that's one of the advantages of doing a pop-up museum that gives you a little bit of a taste of what we want to do. And, you know, walking tours and quarterly lecture series and other programming like that is that we're already, you know, building our base and our community support and getting people excited about it while we look for that building and then while we need to rehab that building and create the museum itself. So I think I'm pretty hopeful because people seem really excited whenever we talk about it.
Absolutely.
Who's likely to be interested in this?
Everybody.
Yeah. Everybody.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, our supporters so far have been run the gamut, you know, mm-hmm. from like age-wise, it's completely intergenerational. People who care about history, who have been historians or you know, think about the past, all the way down to, you know, the guy who owns the little shop on Vine Street in Over the Rhine has been super interested. We've reached out to a lot of people. We've had, you know, private meetings and bigger meetings with all kinds of stakeholders. So we want to make sure that we really listen to everybody's perspective and we get, you know, we really are able to represent all the voices and all the stories in the neighborhood. So everyone right. has been super supportive.
I think if we look at what's going on in Over the Rhine, there's so much interest in investment, and I think we would probably argue that that's because there's so much history there, but that's mm-hmm. that's from the street. That's being able to see there's historic buildings. Okay, great. But what if you could step inside of one and see all that history in an interactive way? I think it's not necessarily you have to be, you know, a certain kind of person. I think everybody's kind of interested in the story of Over the Rhine as we're seeing.
Yeah, I think it's such a dynamic neighborhood that being able to tell this as a really multifaceted story, it's almost like there's something for everyone. And mm-hmm. I think that's what we're finding as we talk to different groups of people.
Yeah, and they can probably identify with some part of that story, right, mm-hmm. at any point in history.
The museum in New York that you're modeling this after, mm-hmm. Is that the only one, or are there other similar types of museums in other parts of the country?
Well, so the Tenement Museum began or was founded in 1988, and mm-hmm. when they were started, it was really incredibly innovative and transformative, and it changed the way people think about museums. So other people have followed that model, that sort of immersive, no barriers kind of model, you know, walking into house museums and those kinds of interpreted spaces. But there are not really museums that do multifamily tenement style buildings with multiple apartments interpreted as different moments in time in the way that the Tenement Museum does.
And as far as you know, no other cities that have dedicated a museum like a specific neighborhood in that?
Well, there are museums like that. Recently in San Francisco, the Tenderloin Museum opened, and that would have similarities, also inspired by the Lower East Side Tenement Museum, in terms of being a place that tells a lot of different stories of a neighborhood going through really intense change.
Mm-hmm. Based on what you've seen, you think this is sustainable? You think this is something that you can keep going?
Yeah, and part of our fundraising efforts will be to create an endowment. So we're not just going to open this museum, get it off the ground, and then have no financial support. We're going to make sure through the planning stages that we can support this and sustain this for the long run.
And I think part of the museum is depending on the space, what more can we do with that? Is there a potential for a commercial space? Is there potential for even a place where an intern can live, people can rent? So it's not maybe just a strictly museum space, but could also be part of the community that can also generate some revenue as well.
So the next thing people need to be looking for is the pop-up museum?
Well, before that, just coming up next month, we have our second lecture of this lecture series that we've started. It's called Three Acts of Over the Rhine. And the idea of the series is that we'll bring together three very short talks on different Over the Rhine related topics. So like I said, we did one in July, and the next one's coming up December 3rd. So that's going to be at Philippus Church on McMicken Street at 5:30 in the evening. And we have three speakers. One talking about the history of the Turners societies, which were the German gymnastic societies in Over the Rhine. One talking, doing an Appalachian history topic. And then one talking about the history of the pork packing industry and the way that industry impacted the way that people lived in Over the Rhine. So those three different topics will each get it's a 15-minute talk and then questions on each one.
Okay. And then, of course, when can we expect the pop-up museum? Do we have I want to see that. That's what I'm looking forward to. So I want to know when that's coming.
Well, we have put out some grants. We're working on getting grant funding for that. And if those come through, which we hope they will, we're looking at the end of 2016. So we do have definitely some partners who are willing to give us storefronts. So finding a space for that's not going to be a problem. It's just getting the funds that we would need to actually fill in, put the actual exhibit together.
Mm-hmm. You have any idea how many people a museum like this might draw to Cincinnati?
You know, all I can tell you is that the Lower East Side Tenement Museum is the second most visited museum in New York City, and they make over $3 million a year in just ticketed income from people coming to the museum. So it's incredibly popular, and it appeals to people in a way that some other traditional museums might not. Other traditional museums, of course, are great in lots of ways, and they do wonderful things, but this is a different kind of experience.
And might it draw people from outside Cincinnati, too?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thanks, everybody, for joining me this afternoon. Good to see all of you.
Thank you.
Over the Rhine Museum Board Chair Anne Delano Stewart and board members Nancy Urian and John Blatchford. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives of our program are available at WVXU.org. Today's show was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai with help from Kevin Reynolds. Rick Andres was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now next on 91.7 WVXU.